thank you for joining us today for the Fair Losophy podcast. We're going to be talking about everything related to fair trade fashion, including sustainability, ethics, human trafficking, our artisans, and keeping kids in school. My name is Jackie Costello, and I own the Golden Rule Boutique, an all fair trade boutique based in San Diego. My co-host is Jen Parlin, and she is a fair trade partner with Threads Worldwide based in Connecticut.
In this episode, Jackie chats with Cynthia Lovely. What a great name, right? Cynthia is the woman behind the nonprofit Shine San Diego. Shine works with survivors of domestic violence, rape, and the commercial sex trade, teaching them leadership and business skills. Enjoy this episode and be well.
Right. Cynthia, thank you so, so much for joining us today. I'm going to read a quick quote from San Diego Reader, and it says that you're doing what you were told you could not be done. Your nonprofit organization, Shine from San Diego, seeks to equip survivors of human trafficking with tools and skills to improve their economic security. I had to use that quote just because I loved it so much, but thank you again for joining us today, especially with everything going on in the world being quarantined. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you for having me. My name is Cynthia Lovely. And yes, they did tell me that this could not be done. There was a lot of things in the beginning of Shine. And I'll just let you know, like, the way that I got here was I am a nonprofit startup specialist here in San Diego for about 20 years. And I've worked with a diverse group of people from foster care to homelessness, veterans. And what I saw across all of that was this economic disparity and the economics of these issues. And so Shine was really, you know, this concept of let's apply an economic solution to a social issue, human trafficking, sex trafficking, because to me, it was like, that's the economics of it. And when they said it couldn't be done, is they're like, oh, you know, they're too traumatized. These victims are, you know, they come from these places that they're not smart enough, like, because they think that we think that people who are in poverty, you know, lack education or aren't educated in the school system. But I mean, streetwise, they're very savvy. So I didn't see that myself as far as when I was working with the women. I saw them as very capable. And so I just went ahead and did it. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to apply the same social structure issues that we've been doing in these other areas of foster care and reentry from prison. And that we do the same structure for all of these social issues. And so it's housing, it's job training, and it's provide basic needs. And I'm like, that's just boring. So they said that couldn't be done, but here we are, a year and a half later, and the Survivor Business Network is alive and well, and we've got 9 survivor-owned and operated nonprofits and businesses that are fully operational.
Oh my gosh, that is so amazing. And what I love about our podcast and these interviews is that we get to hear really these businesses and nonprofits really thinking outside the box. So when somebody says something can't be done, we have these fun interviews where we get to figure out how did you accomplish that when someone was telling you what can't be done. So that's awesome. And I'm gonna read another quick little vision from your website that you guys put together, just because I think, again, that is so perfect and beautiful. And I don't usually do that, but you guys did such a good job with this as well. So our vision for Shine is for every survivor to follow her dreams for a meaningful career where she is valued and inspired to live her best life. This is possible only with a network of people who can teach, inspire, encourage, and support her. We need community to create the possibilities where dreams come true. Oh my gosh, I just love that so much, because one, you're talking about community. We can't do this without each other. We need everyone to participate, and we need community. And then how important that person is, that survivor, you know, she's valued, and we want her to live her best life. I love that so much.
Thank you. Oh, that's so nice to hear, because those are like my words and my heart and my I don't know if you've, putting together a website is one of the most trying things when you're launching a new business. It's like, you know, how do you captivate your audience and really, you know, express what is the heart of your business? So thank you for that. And I think that was the shift in the stigma that I saw needed to happen early on, was that value. And that's really the charge that we carry every day. And that really hasn't shifted much. Some people see that, like yourself. I think women might have a better way of seeing victims as, you know, overcoming those obstacles, and survivors as capable individuals that have overcome something that strengthens them in a way, doesn't weaken them. I guess that's the difference. You know, I see it as strengthening, and people were telling me it was weakening. And so that value, it seems like there's this charge that we have to continually remind people of the value of our experiences in life, and that it's not even equality, it's just respect and, you know, just an understanding. Maybe if I sat and listened with this person and heard their story, I could see the skills that they've learned. I could see the things that they bring to the table. And then how can I support her in her passion? Not, I want you to go work at this job that I set up with this employer, and I'm going to teach you interview skills, and I'm going to teach you what to wear and shake a hand, which is really important. And I get it. And if they're, you know, if I say to her, where do you want to work? What is it that you enjoy doing? What is something that inspires you? She's going to show up. She's going to show up more fully. And so in my past experience, actually, I don't think that we valued the groups that we were working with. So I'll use foster care, for example, because I was in that for 15 years. So transitional foster youth, we see it as inherently bad. Their parents did something to them, but then they're labeled, right? And so we did this employment training program, and we would set up these jobs at Target, and we put all this time and energy into, like, you want to be a customer service person, and, you know, we're going to do this for you. And we would train them, and, you know, here's your first day on the job. We haven't asked them, like, is that what you want to do? We're telling them, like, you have to get a job. This is what society expects of you, you know, and you're going to get a low-paying job in a customer service place, and you have trauma. And ultimately, the youth would go to the job, and they'd get fired within like a week. I mean, a day, some of them. But it was this idea that I came to the table with these experiences, and I was upset that I was seeing the same formula. And when we look at human trafficking and we look at sex trafficking, the system understands these individuals can make some money. So we've got to offer something different. This isn't a system-dependent person. And I actually was starting to see they wanted to create system dependency. So if we can provide the solution, if we're the ones with the answers for you, then you're going to keep coming back to us, and you're going to keep, you know, knocking on our door so that we can feed you. And I was like, oh, no, not again. We're going to break that. And so it really is more about their value being seen from the system and from the community and from all of us in this together. Like, if we're not going to break this sex buying thing, if we can't recognize the economics of it, and we cannot see the value that humans inherently have. If we saw that, nobody would buy a child for sex. And nobody's talking about it. So it just made me so upset. I was like, I have to do something. I have to do something different. And now that it's working and it's disruptive, and I've got survivors are on podcasts. Like, I think you interviewed Monique Anna from Victory Garden Sanctuary. Yeah, that was she's such a incredible, fun right? And as they have their voices and their faces and their stories out there more, and as their success grows and they dismantle that stigma and that, what do you call it? Like where you're just pushing people down. It's like, no, stay down here. We don't want you to come up where we are. Like stay down there. Like you can only get so high. And when you break that, I think things might really get interesting. Because they're going to lead.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Monique is so amazing. And she is just, her story is just so amazing.
Yeah.
And really, all of them are, right? They are inspiring people that have gone through a lot. Yeah. But they are still valuable and can do amazing things and are doing amazing things. And she's working with other survivors who are also starting nonprofits. It's just amazing. So, I just love everything that you just said. It's just very, very powerful. And it makes sense to the way our systems are right now that they're not working and we need to disrupt them. You know, we need to change the system really, but how do we do that? You know, and that's very, very challenging, but, I didn't realize how young Shine was. You just mentioned it's a year and a half old. Oh my gosh, it's still a little baby, but that's so cool. So I'd love to hear your personal journey of why you started nonprofit. You talked a little bit about foster care and how that really, you know, it didn't make sense, the system and what you were doing with the foster youth. But I'd love to talk about a little bit like how you got started and a little bit more about that.
Sure. I do think that it's important to say that not only do they have value, but they have like superpowers. Mm. Yeah. And the superpower that survivors have that I've been able to identify time and time again is intuitiveness. They're like highly intuitive, which is really good for business.
Yeah. Why do you business think that decisions. Is? Where do you think they're getting that intuition?
They have about 30 seconds to read a trick or a John. So the people that are buying them in a hotel room, you don't know who that buyer is, right? You don't know what house you're walking into. And I can give you statistics on how many, you know, women that are sex trafficked die. But the average lifespan is 7 years in the life. So they have to, in 30 seconds, read a person and know if that's a threat or not. And so they just are highly attuned in reading body language. You know, how you see those shows with the FBI and, you know, the profilers and they're watching your every – that's what these women have. And it's really good for business because when you're running a business and you have to make quick decisions, and you have to be highly intuitive and a risk taker, those two things together, brilliant for entrepreneurship. So I didn't want to totally skip agree. Past that.
No, as a business owner, I really agree. Like you really need to have intuition and it's hard to trust your intuition and to have that skill is like – a trick of the trade, right? It's really going to put you one step above somebody else. But I'd love to know, how do you think they're learning it? In just because they're thrown into it or is somebody teaching them, you think?
No, I think it's from early on in life, those who experience ongoing trauma or are in violent situations or have to be on constant alert, it's dualfold for them because on one side of it, they are their mind and the chemicals that are released and the cortisone that is released is damaging to the brain. But on the flip side, they're highly attuned, highly intuitive. And so those skill set, I think, is just over time. And it's what I would call – can I cuss on here?
Yeah, definitely. I love cussing.
It's what I would call the bullshit meter. So like they've got that down. And so as coworkers and as, you know, partners in Shine, that's really what this is. This is, you know, Shine is not a place where I say, oh, we're the service provider and come, you know, take my program. I invite them to partner with Shine, I bring a certain skill set to the table, which is nonprofit, organizational design, and business startup. That is my niche. That's what I can do. And then each of us bring a different skill set. We bring a different, piece of the puzzle to the table. And so we all partner, and the women are now teaching each other in Shine. So the training platform has developed now where I'm not leading all the classes. Now, Monica from Mo Life is doing coaching on marketing and taking care of yourself. And then Monique, Anna from Victory Garden Sanctuary will come in and she'll talk about sustainability of programs and how to leverage the community assets as far as land acquisition goes. And like, it's really interesting how we're all like, we're partners in this. And as it expands and grows, I think the thing that's most exciting for me is to see who's coming next, who's going to join the network, and what strength and in assets and capabilities that they're going to bring to the team to strengthen all of us. And so that's the model. And so I can go back now and answer your question about how I started, getting into this work. You want me to go like way, way back to college? Okay. Well, so I was born in 1975 in San Diego. At Scripps Mercy. It's probably when my social work career did start. but how did I get into social work? it's interesting. So I do think I've always been a social worker. I come from a family, a divorced family, and there was a lot of dysfunction. And so when I went to college, I had originally gone to University of Nevada, Las Vegas for management information systems, which is computer programming and designing. So I'm a pretty smart cookie as well. And I took an intro to social work class. And it was there that I learned about the atrocities that were even greater than things that I had seen in my own life. And I thought it just had this supercharge inside of me and it lit me up. And so I changed my major, came back to San Diego State University, and I got my social work degree in 1999, my bachelor's. What was interesting was I had done my internship with this foster care agency that was treatment level, and they wanted to hire me on. And so I was that person that would like go into the homes and make sure that foster parents' homes were ready to receive a foster child and check off the list. And it was right at the foster reform care time. So we had all this money coming from state to implement new programs for transitional foster youth. Like that was the buzzword. And so all of these programs were coming up around employment training, and that was like where their focus was and the transition and what are they going to do when they leave the system. And, they're leaving at 18 and we don't know where they're going to go. And so I was lucky enough, I went and volunteered actually originally with a program that had received some of this funding. I said, I want to get into this. I want to know more about it. I'm young. I'm thinking, I got all the answers. I want to teach employment to foster youth. And to me at the time, that was like the scariest, biggest thing, which is maybe how people feel about sex trafficking now, because it was like this topic that we hadn't unpacked and it was scary. And they let me volunteer as their lead employment trainer, and I got hired on. And a year later, they wanted to duplicate our project. And so I was asked to go and duplicate the project in East County, San Diego, with another large nonprofit here locally. And then from there, I met a gentleman who was the program manager that wanted to start his own nonprofit. And that was the first 501c3 that I wrote. It was called Foster Youth Incentive, or FYI, which was kind of funny. And I remember, like, working with a friend on the logo. We're like, you know, I knew she did graphic design. I was like, oh, help me out. And those were the beginning, you know, times of me, like, putting together, how do you put together a whole business? How do you put together a nonprofit, a corporation? Set up a board, all of that. Foster Youth Incentive was unfortunately, we got our funding to work with probation youth, and that was just not my thing. I was not I love probation youth as well, don't get me wrong. But it was like, when you're really focused on, it would be like today for me, like here I am, you know, really focused on human trafficking and domestic violence, gender violence. And yes, there are tons of other issues that need attention. Let's, you know, but for me, that's my niche and my focus. So back then, I ended up leaving Foster Youth Incentive, and I went and worked then at the YMCA of San Diego at a transitional living program. And I was really lucky that about 6 months into that job, there was a new transitional living home for foster youth specifically in Escondido called Mary's House that was opening, and they knew that I was good at startup, and they moved me up there to launch that program. And that was like my baby. I had a 6-bedroom home on 8 acres in Escondido with 6 transitional foster youth women, 18 to 23. And it was so exciting. It was like, I got to hire the staff. I got to fire the staff. No, I got to do it all. But I also got to implement holistic. So I had the freedom of program design, and I brought in Tai Chi and Qigong and cooking classes. And, you know, the women that stayed there, I'd have a star of the month, and she would go to the spa. And they've never gone to the spa, right? Like, the youth are like at 18, they're just coming out of this system that we could do a whole episode on. But, but they had never been to a spa. So it was like, I got to do the cooking classes, nutrition, and I loved designing that program. And in between, there was a lot of other startups. There was a lot of, you know, little ones on the side. Like, I was still dabbling with, like, oh, I'm going to start my own clothing company, or I'm going to start my own printing company. You know, like, I was like, I don't know, I just like doing startup. And when I had my second child, I couldn't stay at Mary's House because it was a 24-hour commitment. And so I left. And the word on the block in San Diego at that point was like, if you're going to start a nonprofit and you need somebody to come in and set things up, you know, Cynthia's the woman to call. So I was home with my newborn, and I get a call from Just in Time for Foster Youth. And they're like, okay, well, we're looking to leave Child Abuse Prevention Foundation and set up our own on the side. And so we heard you're the person to call. I'm like, okay. So started that. And then it just kept going. It's just kept going. And it's wonderful. It's always been through word of mouth. I've been able to launch so many successful, innovative, outside the box nonprofits. Like, it's just, when talking about it right now and reflecting on that piece, wow, like, that's pretty cool that I've done all of that. And then you think about the ripple effect and how many lives are impacted. And it's really those first 3 years of startup, which, you know, I'm in 18 months of my own. I never thought I would start my own. And the one that I started is helping, you know, survivors start theirs. So
I'm still
doing what I love in the sense of launch. I'm like, launch, launch.
You can do it.
Launch.
Yes. No, I think it's so perfect and so aligned with your story, like, that everything has led you right here. Mm. And I love even the pieces of what you're showcasing on your website is like, these are other networks that are doing amazing things. These are other nonprofits that are doing similar but different things that we collaborate with. I love that because a lot of times nonprofits, a lot of times people want to start nonprofits, right? Because they have these great intentions and maybe they're doing something, but let's say this next organization is doing almost the same thing, but they're a missing link to what the other one is, you know? And it's like, we should all be collaborating together for those missing pieces. I say that often for even when I'm at networking events, like I know this person who's doing this very similar thing. You guys should collaborate for when you have missing links, you know,
yeah,
for listing pieces for your business. So I really think you show that very well on your website of what you guys are doing. So
thank you. Awesome. I'm like, uh-oh, you don't want to dive into the collaborative nature of nonprofits, do you?
No.
That might get me in trouble. I was like, topics not to talk about.
All right, we'll skip that one then. No, we don't have to do that.
We don't want to be too political today, right? There is a pandemic happening.
Yes, totally. So many things we can dive into, I'm sure. But I'd love to hear more, and I'm sure our listeners would as well, more about Project Scene. Can you dive into a little bit about that?
Oh my gosh. Yes. So that's where we started. Okay. So like I was saying, there was a stigma. There is a stigma. And we're hearing that sex trafficking and human trafficking survivors is basically the images that we all see. So we see the high stilettos and the torn pantyhose and the street workers, right? As they say, or ladies of the night, which all of that's kind of triggering for us that are in this industry. We don't, yeah. Well, it's not work for the side that I'm on. Other people, that's the controversial piece in this whole arena. And so that is the thing. Like, this is a political issue. This is a controversial issue. And I don't think that we as non-survivors do a very good job of telling the story. We tell the story to sensationalize it, to garner the support. We use these things to evoke in our society, oh, that poor person, and oh, it's so scary. And, you know, so all of these images are like chains, and they've got like, you know, tape across their face. And I mean, you've seen all these images, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we all have. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this is probably the smartest place to start. And at the time, I had met at a human trafficking committee meeting Michelle Zausmer, who is this incredible humanitarian photographer. And I also knew Bethany Kelly, who is a survivor with a publishing, self-publishing authorship company. And I probably just said that all wrong, but sorry, Bethany. she does self-publishing. She does an incredible job of that. And so Project Scene was giving the survivors back their stories. Let them tell their stories. Let them reclaim their narrative. Let's talk about, you know, who they are and what their experiences are, and let them be the ones with the cameras taking the images and telling their own stories in a creative way, however they choose to. And wow, I think looking back on it now, Jackie, like I needed that. I needed to know those stories.
Yeah.
Because I was stepping into an arena I knew nothing about.
Yeah. Sometimes that's so true. Sometimes we just dive right in because we're passionate, but we don't know enough about something that we get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know? So that's such a beautiful piece that she got to share with you. Well, with the world, right?
Yeah,
but that you got to participate or read, I guess.
Sorry, well, there I'm was losing 17, my words right now. No, it's fine, but there was a lot of them. We had 17 go through. So it was Project Scene 1, Scene 2, Scene 3. Like, it really took off. And we sat with it the whole first year because there was the idea, right, of, okay, let's launch these businesses. Mm-hmm. And let's start here with Project Scene. And we're giving the women cameras. We We met with them for 4 weekends in a row. And we would do one workshop would be on how to use the camera and do your own photography. And they would take the cameras and come back the next week with their photos. And that's when we would do the writing prompts and the writing portion. And it could, you know, be what we wanted them to have choice. And I think that was a big piece for us was, you know, that it's not us telling you what to do. Like, you don't have to be here. Like, when people show up to program, when people show up to ask for help, they are the ones taking the action to receive that help. Mm-hmm. And I really honor that in their bravery to do that and to share their stories in a safe container. And then at the last class, I would bring in sort of the business idea. I would talk about, like, you could have a photography company. You could do blog writing. Like, we would just explore kind of other avenues of earning income that maybe they hadn't thought of.
Yeah.
And so we kept, you know, doing that. And now I'm excited. We partner with Outside the Lens, who actually has, like, over a decade of putting cameras into communities that are not normally given the opportunity to tell their stories. And they're incredible. And Project Scene is now at the STARS program. So we're with youth that are at risk of being in the life or in the life, ages 12 to 21. Yeah. And it's all survivor-led. So now there's an art piece that's been brought in. And I've given Project Scene to the Survivor Leadership, and it's theirs, and they're running it. And it's just awesome for me to watch and to see and to now be able to, like, bring that to the youth and to hear their stories. And that's a funny story. I could tell that story. So we go to the STARS program for the first time, and it's always nervous, you know, it's like, oh, it's the first Project Scene, and we've, you know, we've wanted this for so long, and the youth, and who is it going to be, and what food are we going to bring? So I brought Mediterranean food, which they'd, like, never seen. I guess everybody brings pizza. I was like, of course we're not going to do that, because we're shine. So, you know, they're like, what is this? We're like, hummus. Like, wow. They love it. I guess they're still talking about it today. I got an email about that. But they're like, when are you coming back? They love your food. Super sweet. And then my survivor leaders are there. And we had talked about it before, like, what is our topic? And so the survivors, it's really interesting with Project Scene. What they've done is they've created duality because they like choice. So if their topic is love, then it's unloved. If it's what's another good one? You know, fear, fearless. You know, so they always have this duality where you can choose which direction you want to go. Isn't that interesting? Right? Like, they're doing a better job than I ever could have. So I'm trying to tell people. And so we're in there and we chose love and unloved. And I, you know, I do the intro. I'm really now at this point, I'm like bringing the food and hanging out. It's so great for me too. And the survivor leaders are leading the class, and I'm going around and we're doing this art project. They had a little writing prompt, and they were making these books, pamphlets that they could, almost like a little journal, and they had their writing prompts in there. And I go around and I'm starting, you know, to look at what the youth are doing. Now, mind you, they're like average age is 13 to 17, and the youth that are in there, several of them have kids that you can hear next door in the childcare center or are pregnant themselves. So, I mean, we're really in the thick of it. We're at, you know, the large eyelashes and the long nails. I mean, these youth are working on the streets or being, you know, turned out. I mean, it's like we're in it now. This is like, wow. for us. And we're talking about loved and unloved, which is a really deep topic. And I don't think I could have led that. I think that the survivors were, with the words that they choose and the energy that they create just naturally from their experience and their connection to them just through that experience, beautiful. My favorite one one of the young women made the postcard, and it had two broken hearts up, in the corners. And it was like the heart, with the line down the middle, that's all broken. And it says, "Fuck love." Oh, that's brilliant.
I love you that you brought up this topic about love and on love and everything, because I interviewed the founder of a nonprofit called Your Truth Foundation. I don't know if you know of them, but I got to interview Matt, and one of their they have a couple different legs of their nonprofit, which most nonprofits do, right? But they teach youth how something similar, like how to know what love is, because oftentimes the vulnerable are getting trafficked, right? Yeah. So they're being tricked into thinking that they're in a loving relationship, and then over time they're being manipulated into some type of trafficking. So it's such an interesting topic. How do you teach someone that, but it's being done. You guys are doing it. They're doing it. And even, just the other day, we were watching This Is Us, and, watching a lot of TV right now in quarantine. But
yes, we all are.
Right, exactly. But one of the episodes, I don't know if you watch the show at all, but the daughter of the show, she's like 17, 18 years old, and she winds up in like this abusive relationship. And her boyfriend leaves her on the side of the road at one point, and then locks her out of the house when it's snowing outside, like freezing. She doesn't have a jacket. And I turn to my husband and I go, "How do you teach someone that that's not right and how to be loved?" And we just kind of pondered it for a minute. But again, you guys are doing that. You guys are teaching young people that. And it's such a hard thing to navigate because it's so abstract, but we have to draw the line somewhere that this isn't right and this is what love looks like, and we should be teaching everybody that, because otherwise you get caught up in it,
Yeah, and it's a good point. It's where, the survivor leaders and those that have their nonprofits really talk about the recidivism. Somebody comes into a program who has now left the abuse, we'll say, the exploitation. Because mm-hmm. Again, we work with domestic violence and rape and gender violence individuals. They really all overlap. There's an intersectionality to these issues. And what is happening in domestic violence is very similar and mirrors the trafficking pimp and trafficking relationship. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about these conversations and how to stop the recidivism, it's you've got to find a way to help people feel their value. Back to the value statement. Like the only way that I could come up with was for me to show you your value. And how do I do that? I give you opportunities to lead. I invest in you. Yep. I support you. I listen to you. I don't make you feel bad if you make a mistake. I remind you that you're human. I don't push you when you're down. Mm-hmm. And that actually led to, we had a collaborative fundraiser. Wow. I mean, I actually Googled collaborative fundraiser and Google was like, "Don't do it." There's like nobody who is doing it. There was nobody who was doing it out there. They were kind of like, people or organizations will support one larger organization, but there was like no thing for a collaborative fundraiser. So ours is Kindness Fest. It's a music and arts festival that we held in November. Yeah, roots, rock, reggae. It was really the final for the group that I had been working with for the year, because I wanted to see how they could put a project together and launch it successfully with the marketing and all the pieces that go into a mini festival. Mm-hmm. Super successful, wonderful event at the end of the night. And I know she'll be okay with me sharing this. Taisha Harvey, who is just incredible. Her story is shown in Shattered Dreams, Sex Trafficking in America documentary that was made at Palomar College and that has won, like, I don't know, 20 independent film festivals now. So Taisha's on the mic.
Can our listeners watch that anywhere?
Yeah, they can. Can they watch it anywhere? It was supposed to be on IMDb. Is that the? But if you just go on Facebook or if you put in Shattered Dreams Film, .com, it'll bring it up. Marjorie Saylor is also in that. She's with The Well Path, who's in the Shine Business Network as well. And I could go on and on about these women and their organizations and what they're doing. But the piece about Shine and my focus and the love piece, right? The support piece, the investment in their vision, the investment in listening to what their solutions are, that they are the ones to lead, encouraging them to lead. So, you know, here we are then in November at this successful fundraising event. And at the end, Taisha Harvey gets up on the mic and she's, you know, saying we wouldn't all be here if it wasn't for this woman. And I'm thinking like, oh, she's probably talking about me. But I, you know, she hasn't like really said. And she's got this like gift up there. They had this painting of a woman that everybody had signed. And, you know, she's giving me this beautiful, heartfelt thank you. And so I'm noticing like, oh, she's talking about me. Okay. So I kind of like walk over to the stage and I'm standing there to receive my gift. And she had like tears in her eyes, which gave me tears in my eyes. And she was like, Shine San Diego is the first place that I have not felt re-exploited in the 3 years since I had left the life. And because her story is so public, she was in the life 17 years. So her brilliance far exceeds. She's like, I'm always learning from her. I mean, the knowledge that this woman speaks into the world, the truth that she shares. But it was that piece for me. It was that she had never felt. She had never felt that. And that's how you teach it. Yes. You give it.
Yes.
We all can do that. Like, it's super simple. And I'm thinking about what's going on right now. And like, we see these characteristics of society like boil up of like mine and hoarding and against each other and this, but I am a living example of like when you give people just love and support, they'll give it back and they get to feel it. And she calls me the plug. She's like, girl, are you the plug? And I'd be like, you know, I'm like, oh, you want to do this? Don't recreate it. Here, let me give you the number for a CEO. She's like, I can't call a CEO. I said, girl, you are a CEO. Yes. It says it on your business card now. You know, like, no, you're going to call her. And she has, and she is, and she's, you know, all of the nonprofits that are in the business network and the businesses, you know, that they're all interconnected and that they're all working in this ecosystem of support. And what we're doing next is figuring out how do we create a wealth model that's like a co-op or like a shared economy or a barter. Like, there's all of these different models out there. And so we're looking at how do we take the best from each of these models and create one that helps build survivors' economic security. And if there is anything that I would want your listeners to take away, like, that's the core, is creating economic security. And to say that right now, it seems really interesting because I don't know if we're doomed. I don't know what's going on. You know what's going on? I don't know what's going on.
I was just going to say, I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen, where the economy's going or anything. You know, it's a scary time. But again, if you're not continuing to hoard or help, you know, if you continue to help each other, you know, then the world's going to be okay, and we're all going to be okay. But it's really taking a step back and realizing that, because it's scary seeing what's on social media. It's scary seeing what's on the news. It's sometimes scary going to the grocery store right now, you know? So
yeah,
really, really taking a step back, because I think everyone is doing things out of fear right now. So if we take a step back and instead of responding to somebody, you know, if they take the last roll of toilet paper right in front of you and you needed it, you know, it's okay. Send them some love and you know, it's okay. But that takes, it takes a lot to do that, because all of our energy is up here, right?
Yeah.
Instead of where we're normally at, we're like, okay, we have normal stressors, but we all have normal stressors and then everything that's going on top of it. Yeah. So it's a lot. It's a lot for all of us. And I was going to ask this at the end, but I was going to say, what tips would you give for our listeners right now in the state of the economy, the quarantine, just everything that's going on, being working from home? What tips do you have for them?
Well, I'll start off with my philosophy. And I am so grateful that I thrive in not knowing and in risk taking. And so the world's experiencing the life of startup and working with human trafficking. Right. So what I would say is that life is uncertain and that we create structures to provide a false sense of security. And to be able to understand that and to get that meaning from this, how valuable our lives are, mm-hmm. how valuable each day is, how spending time with your family is so important, and thinking about slowing down a bit is probably a good idea. It has also, you know, the advice, I guess, is like give from a place of abundance. Don't give from a place of lack. If you're tired one day, don't go to that meeting. Don't push yourself to do that. I've learned to take care of myself for the long haul in startup, because there are these times where I burn myself out. And I'm sure a lot of people are feeling really burnt out. And that's okay. Then you just take some time off. And listen to that internal guidance system that is the hyper system that survivors have, right? Like, so, I mean, that would be my best advice. And then as far as where we're headed, it's been incredible to watch the survivor leaders go right now. Like, they're all, we've organized on the back end, a fund to support them, because they were already on the edge of economic uncertainty all the time. So this really pushes us like right into that emergency mode, but we're always in emergency mode because we do have groups that do rescue. So we work in emergency mode. And so we've put together a fund to help support, you know, with the things that they need. And we've created a survey to ask for what those needs are. What I found interesting is I included in there yoga, meditation, you know, rent, cell phone bills. Like I, you know, what do you need? So this is the difference with Shine, is I'll say, okay, what do you need? I'm not going to say, here's what we have gift cards for you. So that would be like a normal response, right? Like, I need toilet paper. Well, I've got napkins. You're like, but I'd really like the toilet paper. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, that's kind of like how we do it in the world. It's like, oh, but I got this for you. Be happy for the napkins.
Yeah.
It's like, bitch, I wanted the toilet paper.
Yeah. Hello.
So what we do is we say, what do you want? Mm. Interestingly enough, yoga was at the top of the list.
Yeah.
The survivors. I mean, you know, like, is this as like moderate emergency? You know, I have them like, you know, is it an emergency now? Like, or can we wait a few weeks kind of thing? And like the basic needs, and like, and then we'll survey them next week and next week. So we're kind of seeing like when the emergency hits. But I thought it was really interesting because a lot of people right now have free yoga classes, and so that's the services that are being offered. And then that was like what they wanted. And I'm like, perfect. We're doing yoga, folks.
I love it.
So how cool is that? Yeah. I mean, because on this end too, you know, we're always, well, not always, but most of the time we are dealing with those immediate needs. You know, we need food, we need shelter, we need those things. And now it's interesting to see that when people are destabilized in knowing, not knowing about their housing, maybe you're going to have some empathy next time you walk past a homeless person. Yeah. Maybe you're going to have a little second thought about how other people live every single day. Because y'all freaking out about stuff that's been happening for as long as I've been in social work.
Yeah.
This is actually nothing new.
Yeah.
For a lot of people. That's all I'm saying.
For a lot of people, right. Yeah,
so absolutely. We're like, well, okay, the difference is we have a virus that is a real health concern. And for me, just as an individual, I hope, and this probably you and your listeners as well, I hope that we value our health over our economics. And that is what I think is the polarity right now that we're going to have to face.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that that's what's being challenged right now is those two things. You know, it's like, how long can we survive and all of that with.
You can't survive if you're dead.
Right. Exactly.
Nobody's going to care about your nice house either.
Yeah.
My husband's a respiratory therapist at Scripps Mercy. He's a frontline worker and he's doing respiratory. As we know, this is a respiratory virus.
Well, thank you to him. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. So quarantine is real.
Is he quarantined?
He's not yet, but we, you know, day to day, he's not. And I'm so grateful for those like yourself that are still able and willing to show up and do the work, do the important work, have the important conversations right now. Because this is the time.
It's still challenging. We know that, you know, we had to push back our date and, you know, change everything, you know, because life is a little crazy right now, but I think I mentioned to you how we're moving, but our realtor said to us the other day, she said, what comforts her is knowing that everyone's in this. You know, it's not just me. It's not just my struggle. It's the world's problem right now. So that comforts her. And I have to say that comforts me too, because Jen and I like to say how we're always so connected. And that's why we love our podcast, because we're connecting not only artisans all over the world, but survivors of human trafficking and nonprofits. And it really teaches our listeners how we are all connected and how buying products really can affect people across the world. But
right. How interesting right now too.
Yes.
Yeah. People are seeing supply chain issues, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's being brought up a little bit. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things being brought up, but it's we want even our small businesses to survive. So it's like, how can we support them? And it's just so many things going on. So, but that is a comforting piece. You know, we are all so connected and we're all going through it together. You know, we're all struggling with the same things of working from home and children from school and, you know, all of those things. So I think virtual conversations like this can help us survive. And we've been FaceTiming with our families and, you know, and reaching out to friends that we haven't heard from in a while. So it helps you step back, you know, and like you said before, slow down. So there are definitely some good things about it. You know, believe me, we're struggling over here just like everyone else, but there are some good things about it too, you know?
Yeah, I think like Diplo is doing like an online concert. I was like, where are the online concerts? we had like ecstatic dance with the family last Friday. Was, you know, online, and they had the DJ mix and all the kids, and we turned the lights off, and like, you know, it was just really, yeah, it's really interesting how, back to adaptability though, you know, we are all connected and we're all very adaptable. And so I don't know about you. What day quarantine are you on?
I have no idea.
We see, this is what happens. We're losing track of time. We're on 13 days.
It's gotta be like that for me too. And my husband.
Wait, today's Thursday? Today's Thursday, right?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't even know what day it is. I don't know what day quarantine. I don't know what day of the week it is. It's like, oh my gosh.
But you made it.
We're here.
Because our Apple was like, ding, ding, in 30 minutes. You got, we're like, 30 minutes. Thank you, Apple.
We made it. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. All of that. It's like, that connectivity and just the adaptability of humans, right? Like, we're very adaptable. So now I'm kind of getting into the like, okay, it's been 2 weeks. Like, okay, how long is this going to be? I don't know.
Yeah. And that's what's, I think that's also what's challenging for a lot of people, is that we don't know how long it's going to be. We don't know how long we're in this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, is this going to be 2 months? Is it going to be 18 months, you know, if we knew.
Back to the uncertainty of life.
Yes.
What exactly. Do we really know, though?
Yeah, we really don't know a lot.
You know what I mean? So it really challenges that. And then when you were saying that, and I'm looking at you in your home and me in my home, gratitude. Mm. And that's a big piece that gets me through day to day that I teach, you know, and we start our classes at Shine with getting centered and grounded in our physical. And then gratitude. And there's always something to be thankful for. And if we can shift our focus from what we don't know, what we don't understand, and what we're fearful of into gratitude, you can't really be in gratitude and be fearful.
No, you can't have those two emotions at once.
Right. So, and it's like, I'm in control of that. I'm in control of my mental and where I choose to focus my attention. And I've been choosing to focus it on wonderful things, I think. And that's where we continue to focus in building those bridges, building those connections, having the conversations, and hopefully inviting more people to join and doing what they love. Even volunteers be like, oh, how do I volunteer? What can I volunteer? I'm like, what do you love to do? And they look at me like, everywhere else tells me what to do. I'm like, well, we're a startup.
we need
it all.
I love it. That's so funny, because I was actually going to ask you, because you have a little button on your website for volunteers. So I was going to ask you, what kind of volunteers are you looking for?
They're like, well, there's a list, you know. I put that up there so long ago. And it works, which is exciting. You know, if people are in startup and we have all of there is so many freelancers and consultants these days. And it's wonderful and exciting. And I'm so excited that tech allows us that. You know, but we do get into this competitiveness. And so volunteering, you know, it's this place for you to bring a skill set or dive into something that maybe you haven't done before and you want to learn more about. Because the beauty of business is it's got all the aspects that we need in the world. We've got marketing, we've got finance, we've got legal, we've got social work, we've got, you know, and if somebody can teach a class, if they have an expertise and they want to teach a class at Shine, that's always so helpful. And I think a great way for people to come meet the team. And again, that helps shift the stigma, because oftentimes people will come in and want to volunteer, think they're going to save somebody. Like, oh no. And they're like, oh, well, you know, the survivors, how do they say it? Oh, we were on the news this one day and she kept saying, oh, the survivors and businesses. And I was like, no, it's survivor businesses. They're like,
hello.
So I think even that, like the volunteers coming and meeting and bringing their skill set, because the network has grown now as well. What Shine does is I curate and train the volunteers, identify what their skill set is, what they're interested in, if they want to do emergency rescue or if they want to do something more stable. Like everybody has their bandwidth, right? Like not all people want to be out on the blade.
And I think it's
midnight.
Yes.
But some people, you know what I mean? But some people do.
Yeah.
So, but we have that whole spectrum. And so what Shine does is I, you know, do the intake, I do the training. I've hired survivors now that are my admin assistants. Like my whole team is survivor led. And then we do the trainings and then we match them with which agency would best suit their interest and their skills.
Very cool.
From college to 80-year-olds. I mean,
yeah. What's amazing about even what you just said about the survivors business or survivors and business, like it's sometimes just one little word can just change the meaning of something. And it's like just a simple little tweak that we can make when we're talking to people that really changes the perspective. So I love that simple thing that you said, but it can make a big difference. So that's just all of it. It's amazing. So thank you so much. I mean, we could.
Thank you.
I feel like we could just talk for hours, honestly. But
well, not like we have anywhere to go.
Maybe we'll just do this again tomorrow. That's fine.
My original advisor. You'll never guess who he is. We had lunch set up today, though. And I was like, well, I guess we're not doing that. Like, it's got lunch with Dave to be determined. I guess we're going to do virtual lunch. How do we do virtual lunch? But
you make your own lunch.
I will give a shout out to Dave Hubinger for coaching me from the beginning of Shine. And anyone who's thinking about starting a nonprofit, don't do it. No. And Dave is much like Shark Tank. We used to be Starlight Enterprises. Okay, thanks to Dave, we're not. Dave was like, we've trademarked Starlight at our first meeting. I'm like, who trademarked Starlight? Well, the Starlight Children's Foundation does. Which was true. So I remember leaving that meeting and crying. I was like so devastated and I was so excited because I got to meet Dave Hubinger. Well, he's one of the former CEO of Nestle. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. Oh my God. Right. Or goddess. Oh my goddess. Woo. Oh my God. I was like so excited to meet him and going to the coffee date and I've got all my stuff together and I'm like, ah, and he's going to look at it and, you know, and he was like, you can't use that name.
Excuse me?
Sorry, what? And I could leave you with this if you have a few more moments. So Dave Hubinger and I were to have lunch today. I guess we're going to do a virtual lunch. But he's really helped me from the beginning, and that's part of startup, and that's part of the flexibility of things. And so I had Starlight Enterprises literally like branded down to the font and the color. Like I showed up to this meeting with my books and like, this is what we're doing. I was super excited and he just scratched it all. And so it was really helpful for me to be in the business world. Like I was coming at it, and what will happen is being a leader will strengthen you in ways that you didn't even know. So I didn't have a name. I was an S with a star. And we had fundraising events. So I was like, we're just going to be an S with a star until I figure out an S word, you know, that's going to be the company's name. So this one night, I go pick up the Asian food for the family, and I had gotten this shrimp and it was the wrong one for my daughter. And so I had to take it back. And so I'm, you know, and I'm getting the right order. And as I come out, there's a homeless gentleman sitting outside. And of course, they're not going to take the food back, right? They're like, no, you keep the misorder. So I had this extra meal. And I was on the phone with my husband. We're talking. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go give this to homeless guy over here. And I see him around town all the time, the meal. So I walk over there and I was like, oh, you know, you want some shrimp? And his face just lit up. He's like, shrimp? I almost named us shrimp because it was an S. But in that moment, I was like, oh, my gosh, everybody shines. And we have been for like 60 days trying to come up with an S name. We're like, shine, shine. It's shine. And so that's actually how we got our name.
That's perfect. I love it. So I love how that happened too.
Can you tell me, Dave, for that?
Yeah, that's perfect. And that you had to know that Starlight Enterprises wasn't going to work.
I went and looked it up too. And then I went home and looked up Shine and was like, is it trademarked? That was the first thing I did.
You knew the step.
Yeah.
So where can our listeners find you?
Oh,
and Shine.
So I think the important thing is Shine is spelled with a Y. Mm, yeah. So people will be looking for us as an I, but we're not. We're a Y. So S-H-Y-N-E. SD for San Diego, SD.org. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as Shine San Diego. My phone number is 619-940-7756. Feel free to text or call, and then the website's got everything that anyone needs, and I'm Cynthia Lovely, L-U-V-L-E-E, which also makes me really easy to find.
Here at the Fairlosophy Podcast, we recognize that we do not live in a bubble. We are all connected. There are people behind every product we shop for, and we can influence their lives when we vote with our dollar. If you like this episode, take a screenshot and share it on your social media. When you do, you'll be entered to win a giveaway that we will do live on Instagram once a month. Tag us and follow us at The Fairlosophy Podcast. Good luck!